Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Footmarks Podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And it's a very interesting topic for this episode of the Footmarks Podcast. I'm really proud of myself for the title, Rishabh's Punt, because when can we ever use that again, right? Like, it's a one-off one. And so is Rishabh in many ways. We're recording this in the direct aftermath of Rishabh Pant's heroics at Headingley. Yeah. India lost the test, but Rishabh Pant scored 134 in his first dig and 118 in his second. And his 252-run tally is the highest ever for any wicketkeeper batter in a test match in England. And he also became the first Indian batter to score twin hundreds versus England in a test match. So really, really, like, you feel for the guy, right, Jared, that he had to end up on the losing side.
Someone told me that most of his best innings or hundreds overseas have ended up on losing causes, right?
Yes.
So he's not quite managed to do very well with that. But look, it was a fantastic innings. And again, you know, came in true Rishabh Pant style, which is his own one of one.
Yeah, we will talk or dig deeper into what his method looks like, because it looks like madness to the viewer, but there is a lot of method behind Rishabh Pant's style, which only he can understand. But just on that little bit that you mentioned, how I have the numbers. He has 6 test hundreds in Senna out of 8 test hundreds in total. So he's much better in all of these countries, South Africa, England, New Zealand, and Australia. And he is overall, he's averaging 44.44 with the bat in test cricket. But out of those six away tons, which have come in 5 test matches, I think India have lost 4 and drawn 1. And you know, when I was growing up, people would throw around Sachin under the bus very frequently, right? I think that's also wrong. I don't exactly agree with it. But they used to say that Sachin Tendulkar will score hundreds, but India won't win those games. Now, obviously, when you do a deep dive in the numbers, you can see that that's not entirely true. But Rishabh Pant is the opposite, isn't he? He is a match winner. He is supposed to win you those games. So this is quite ironic that they've never won those test matches.
I think it just tells you everything you need to know about the fact that bowlers win you test matches and batters don't. I think when it comes down to it, that is essentially what those stats tell you. And I think about Rishabh and about Sachin. That's what we're learning from those. So it is weird. But that innings that he played could have been match winning if India had just taken... If Bumrah had just bowled a normal spell, they'd probably win that, right?
Yeah. I mean, had India taken those catches... had Shardul not played, potentially Kuldeep would have played ahead of him. Many other things, right? India collapsed with the bat twice as well. But that's besides the point. What I really want to talk about, and I think what the real theme about this show is, that Rishabh Pant was doing Rishabh Pant things in this test, falling over and scooping the ball and, you know, just going for those big shots down the ground early on in his innings. I think in both of his innings, on his second delivery, he came out and he slammed the ball down the ground. On one occasion, he was successful versus Stokes. And then the other innings, he edged one over the slips versus Wokesy. But then again, it's not like he was just going on and on as a Mad Max and it was all vibes-based. Rishabh Pant left a billion deliveries. He was in the 90s for an eternity in his second dig. And he also has those pokey shots and those, I don't even know what you call those stops, like drop stops. It's a weird way in which he defends the ball, isn't he? So it's a real mix of everything.
I was wondering about this, and there can be people that are very upset about this in many different ways, but essentially he's a little bit like Ben Stokes in that there's something kind of mechanical about the way he moves at times, especially when he's defending. It's like they both are like, I am going to defend now. And you know, they sort of come into this weird position. And then when they're attacking, there's this incredible freedom about the way they play. Right? Like, it's completely different from that. And yeah, he, you know, I went back and I had a look at it on MV Play and everything. And it's like, it was a mixed bag of sort of all the different things that we know of Rishabh Pant. Whereas I think sometimes people are just like, he's a slogger. And it's like, if he was a slogger, he wouldn't be averaging over 40 in Test cricket. It's like basically impossible to do.
And he wouldn't be leaving all of those deliveries either. And if you watch this Test match, he left plenty. Right? DK made a comment when KL Rahul and Rishabh Pant were in partnership in India's second innings. And he said, on one end, you have classical music. And on the other, you have hip hop. And I think that's a really fun analogy because he does hop a lot. And Rishabh Pant is such a fun guy or a funny guy even at times that you can actually watch him having this internal battle with himself in the flesh. He's talking to himself. He's telling himself, why do you have to fall over and scoop that ball? Why can't you just play it straight? Stuff like that. And it's not like he's always successful doing it either. My mind takes me back to stupid, right? Sonny Gavaskar. And he wins him over in this test match. That Gavaskar wants him to do another somersault. But it's funny how that somersault backflip comes in the first innings as punt celebration, and in the second innings it's calm. And I think that also represents his knocks, because it's not always just throwing the kitchen sink at it. When he does throw the kitchen sink at it, it's just like completely like, okay, I'm just hitting this ball for six. But when he doesn't, he's very awkward when he's defending, and it kind of works for him.
Yeah, he defends probably in a way that I do a little bit as well, which is, I think when your natural style is to hit the ball as hard as possible. And that's what you've always done. Sometimes when you defend, you kind of over-defend. And, you know, sometimes you watch him and you're just like, settle down, mate. It's not like the last session on day five and you're trying to draw out a game. Just block the ball. But he can't. And he sort of over-eggs the defensive shots quite a bit there. So, yeah, I think there is an element of that. And, you know, what I tried to get to in the piece is that someone like Sonny Gavaskar will be absolutely fixated for many different reasons on the bad shots that don't work. But he'll also sit there and applaud on the same days when the bad shots do work.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I don't think as cricket fans, we're very good at sort of understanding, that if you want Rishabh Pant to be Rishabh Pant, then you have to accept that sometimes he is going to hit the ball straight up in the air with the stupidest shot you've ever seen.
Yeah, and that's what Ravi Shastri kept echoing in the comm box, that it's a percentages game and it won't always come off. But another thing that was really highlighted in your piece was that Rishabh Pant is misunderstood by an entire generation of fans, right? And that is the Sunil Gavaskar generation of fans. And it was even more interesting for me to read that two of Gavaskar's own teammates who kept wicket for India, one of them was Farooq Engineer, and I forget the name of the other one. Maybe you can remind me.
Bundi Kundaran. I don't know if they played together, did they, Bundi? But Bundi would have been when Sonny Gavaskar was coming through as a professional or as a teenager, Bundi would have been the wicketkeeper at that time.
Yeah. So both of those guys were also known to be a bit aggressive. In fact, Farooq Engineer, he played 30% quicker than all the other wicketkeepers in his era. And Pant is batting 32% quicker than all the other wicketkeepers in his era. So whilst there is a parallel over there, there isn't really any parallel, because when you look at them bat, Pant is just doing his own weird shit with his one-handed shots, those pokey shots that he has. I actually really like the dab to third man. But he is peculiar when it comes to his playing style. Even his dismissal versus Josh Tung, you know, it looked like a tail-ender's dismissal. Let's be real, right? So he has his own weird way of working out what sort of shots he needs to play. And it's the fact that he's effective which ultimately matters. And that's where people like Sonny Gavaskar maybe struggle a bit.
Yeah, look, when it comes down to it, I think if you look at the Farooq Engineer example of that, Farooq Engineer was seen to be a wicketkeeper first, right? Who offered a little bit of batting and then played his own way and occasionally played these cavalier innings, which really helped India, right?
Yeah.
When your career is finished, that is how you're remembered. During his career, my guess is that there were many times when Farooq Engineer did something and writers and commentators and players, especially former players, were like, why is he playing that shot, right? And the truth is that Farooq Engineer was ahead of his time in the same way that Rishabh Pant is ahead of his time. But as you said, when it comes down to it, if you find a way to make that repeatable, you kind of have to take it, right?
Yeah.
If he's averaging 18 doing it, I think Sonny Gavaskar is more than fine to do that. But we keep trying to make batters into something that they're not and thinking that that will make them better. There aren't too many examples of batters completely changing who they are and making it successful. You know, Steve Waugh is obviously one of the most famous versions of this. But generally, you are who you are and you should bat that way. And it also gives India something that no one else has. Like, they basically have a nuclear weapon in the middle order. Now, sometimes he's going to blow up the opposition. Sometimes he's going to blow himself up.
Yeah, he can self-implode at times, and that's what we saw in that Australian test match, right, where he just a ball ago was almost dismissed that way, and then he does get dismissed that way, and then that's where Sunny G almost, or not almost, he definitely loses it. But anyway, when you're watching Panth bat in Test cricket, you do feel this kind of freedom of expression, right? Like, it is a visceral experience. He's very uninhibited and brazen in the way he plays his shots. And he can be expansive when he wants to. And when he's not expansive, he's pokey. I think that's the best way to describe his style of defensive play. He's very pokey. So, you know, he is kind of in a league of his own when it comes to this kind of player, Jared. And he's versatile on top of that. You can bat him at 6, you can bat him at 5. He really is a luxury of sorts, especially because ultimately he's averaging 44.44 with the bat in test matches, right? Like, that can't be ignored. He is a wicketkeeper bat. That's exceptional.
Yeah, you know, the flexibility he gives you with your batting order is really... I mean, he could bat at 7, right? There's nothing within his batting to say he couldn't bat at 7. So he can bat at 7, he can bat at 6, he can bat at 5. That means that he can play, he can give you an incredibly long batting lineup with Jadeja behind him if you wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Or Washington one day behind him if you wanted to do it, or Nitesh, whoever that is. Or you can go the other way and you can bat him at 5 and use him as an exciting player, which allows you to bat a specialist at number 6. You know, there's a lot of versatility to his usage that not all players like him have.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about Adam Gilchrist and kind of comparing the two together, because they're both really attacking or aggressive batters who completely bat the opposition teams out of the game most times when they click, right? I can't say the same for Panth, because every time he scores 100 in Senna, India don't win. But, you know, I can totally understand the parallel. It's just that, you know, Gilly obviously did it for a far longer period, right? Mm. And he did it in a different era. But Panth, you could argue, is doing it in a tougher era for batting, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
And also, I think, you know, having talked to the people back in those days, I don't think they ever felt very comfortable with Gilchrist batting in the top 6. I don't think Gilchrist felt particularly comfortable with the idea of him batting in the top 6 in Test cricket, which means that, realistically, Australia never used the flexibility of Gilchrist. Now, if he bats at 6, you could play Ian Harvey at 7. I'm trying to think. You could have Paul Rifle and Shane Warne at 7 and 8, right? Like, there were options that they had available to them around that period that they could have played with. But instead, they didn't do that. And so they never really used the flexibility of having Gilchrist. Whereas India's lent all in on that, right? And they are not just putting him at number 6, but putting him at number 5. Which is definitely usually a specialist batting position. So he's of more use in some ways than Gilchrist has been. Now, part of that is just the two different teams that they've been in and everything else. But that allows them to be more flexible with their lineups. And you might disagree with the way they've been flexible. That's a different conversation for Indian cricket fans at the moment. But that is something that Australia never maximized with Adam Gilchrist. And part of it was I don't think they quite thought he was at that level when it came to batting higher up the order. Now, with Panth, you can do that.
Yeah. And, of course, there's also another thing that Panth is really known for, is that he kind of starts getting an itch behind his neck or whatever whenever he sees that there's a matchup which he can completely dominate and no one else is doing it. So he's like, nah, I'm not having any of this. And we saw that when he took down Shoaib Bashir and Joe Root in this test match, right? Like, everyone else in India's batting order wasn't troubled by Shoaib Bashir, but they were just knocking him around. They were like, okay, we'll take the singles. We're not going to risk anything. And you could actually see Rishabh Pant getting frustrated, right? You're like, you can see in his batting that he's like, I can't just go on like this. I have to play a big shot. And then, boy, does he play all those big shots. He absolutely obliterates Shoaib Bashir. And I would say that amongst wicketkeeper batters, you know, in Test cricket, he is one of those modern bats who really, really is handy versus spin, particularly when you want to take the bowling type down.
No, look, it's funny because he's not the sort of player you would think is algorithmic or anything like that.
Yeah.
But he is the sort of person who, when he sees something in his favour, he presses the spam button, right? That lofted cover drive that he kept playing off Root and Shoaib Bashir, I was just like, dude, you are definitely going to get out playing the shot. Please stop playing the shot over and over again. But he's like, no, well, if I'll just play with the spin and I'll hit a bunch of boundaries and we'll cash in. And, you know, again, it's that ability to explode the opposition's plans, right? If they had to bowl Joe Root because Shoaib Bashir was unbowlable, right?
Yeah.
And so straight away, you've already upset the opposition. That's what Rishabh Pant does. And as you said, once he finds something in his favor, he just goes all in.
And he's very, very random, isn't he? Like, you cannot predict what Rishabh Pant is about to do next. Will he go for like an uber defensive shot, which he won't even look all too comfortable playing? Or will he just absolutely throw his bat at it? And when he goes expansive, he goes as expansive as he possibly can. It's that Brighton Kaas top edge that I'm thinking about, right? On another day, that's out. And Sonny G is pissed again. But Rishabh doesn't care. Do you think that maybe he decides before the ball is bowled, or is he just really quick in making that decision once it's bowled? Because I'm really confused when it comes down to deciphering that.
No, I think he makes the decision before the ball's bowled, which is something that usually gets you in more trouble than it gets him in.
Yeah.
And I think, to go back to Ben Stokes, I think Ben Stokes does this as well. And usually what happens is it gets you into positions that you can't get out of. And it does for Rishabh Pant sometimes. But his hands are so quick that he kind of can make up for it with those hands, right? Like, you know, his hands will get him out of trouble a little bit. But yeah, no, I definitely think he does that. And so he's not reacting to the ball. And, you know, I was writing about him before, you know, while he was still batting, and thinking like how tricky he must be to bowl to. And then Stuart Broad comes on afterwards and he's just like, yeah, there's no pattern to what he does.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you've ever played, you know, there's always a guy you play in club cricket who just blocks two balls and hits the next one for four, right? And I used to play against those guys. And then once you've worked them out after about 15 or 20 balls, the best way to get in their head is to count the balls. Like, block. All right, this is your one, mate. Do you want to move the field for you? And get in their heads, because they didn't know they were doing it, right? They're not doing it intentionally. But if they've blocked a couple, they're like, oh, I need to hit the next one. His is really more random than that, right? He can go seven or eight balls without doing it. He can hit two boundaries in a row when the mist is going. You know, like, he doesn't do it in that sort of more cliched cricket style. And that's why, you know, I compared it to an iPod shuffle. It must be so hard to bowl to, because you're not sure if this is the ball he's going to dead bat, or if this is the ball he's going to run down the wicket and flat bat you over the minnow's head.
Yeah, it is very, very random. You cannot predict it. And I've spoken to a lot of Indian fans who've said that it's really hard watching him bat. As much as we appreciate him, he gives us heart attacks every now and then. And I understand the sentiment. But anyway,
well, if you look at Gilchrist, just to compare him to Gilchrist, this is why I think he's more like Stokes, the way he attacks. Is Gilchrist, he's sort of standing there like a baseballer, right? Thinking he's going to muscle every ball. And then at the last minute, he's like, I can't hit that one. I'm going to block it, right? Look at Rishabh Pant. It doesn't look like that at all. It looks like, oh, I'm going to block this one. I block it. I'm going to hit this one. I hit it. It's very different.
At least he's clear-headed in what he wants to do, I suppose. And here's a fun stat from Varun. He says, Rishabh Pant averages 34 playing lofted shots versus spinners. Only Jaiswal is better with an average of 39. So that's a good one. Anyway, there is more stuff to talk about Pant. And before that, we will be taking a short break. You guys are watching Footmarks with Jared and Behram, and we'll be back in like half a minute. So go nowhere.
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I have been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Welcome back to the Footmarks podcast. You guys are with Jared and Behram. And, you know, we think about other wicketkeeper batters in the same mold as Rishabh Pant. And anyone who's watched cricket in the last 25 to 30 years will instantly think of Adam Gilchrist because of the style of play. Although I do understand where you're going with the Stokes debate. But if you look at nearest neighbors in terms of what they have achieved, well, Rishabh Pant just became the second wicketkeeper in the history of Test cricket to score twin tons in a Test match, right? The only other guy to achieve that is Andy Flower. And you kind of dug deep into this. And I was really, really fascinated by how both of their median entry points are very similar, right? But they're very, very different kinds of batters. If Pant fires, if he's successful in what he's trying to do, then all of a sudden, that doesn't even matter and you are ahead of the game. Whereas Flower is probably very, very consistent, but it'll take him a while to get you to that spot.
Varun might be able to put this up on the screen, but I think their median entry points are around 63 to 65, right? So that's when they come in batting at number five. Just for comparison, Gilchrist came in with the score at 5 for 230, right? Damn. Like, it's like, even if you go, well, he was batting two spots lower. Hmm. Yeah, he wasn't batting that much lower than them, right? So it tells you what an incredible ride to the crease Gilchrist had compared to Flower. Flower's one's fascinating because essentially the Zimbabwean players, their problem wasn't going out. It's just that they couldn't score. So he would come in with quite a few overs of the game out. It wasn't like he was coming in against a new ball a lot, but there was no runs on the board. So they had still not managed to score any runs. I was talking about this with Pommy the other day. Pommy was at the World Test Championship and we were talking about Flower, and I was like, the guys could bat, they just couldn't score. And so Flower would come in and it'd be 60 for three, even though they'd be batting for 20 or 30 overs or 40 overs, right? Like, they just hadn't gone anywhere. So Pant has a similar median entry point. And the reason he has a similar median entry point is because home and away, India have been on really, really tough wickets. So you've got an attacking player coming in at number five, in trouble over and over again. And that's what the numbers suggest to you, you know, and we know that because, you know, Rohit has struggled and, you know, Virat has struggled and, you know, they've had some issues here. Oh my God.
So there we are. Those numbers. 63.5 for 3 is the median entry point for Andy Flower, and it's 69.5 for 3 for Rishabh Pant. Gilchrist is 243 for 5.
It's just, those numbers are so ridiculous. So you have this situation where he's batting like Gilchrist, but coming in at Flower-like positions.
True.
And, you know, for those of us who grew up with both those players, Gilchrist and Flower weren't even compared that much because they were so different. Even though they were both keepers, they were so different in where they batted in the position, in the order, how they went about their cricket and everything else. So Pant is doing this weird crossover of both of those things.
Yeah. And another thing that is a direct consequence of Rishabh Pant batting the way he does and being as random as he is that as a fielding team captain, you are really, really confused on how to set a field for him because you saw Ben Stokes and how he brought the slip fielders out. And basically at that point, you're waiting for Rishabh Pant to make a mistake. But what if he doesn't make a mistake? And what if he edges one, which is what he did, right? He does edge a couple through an empty slip cordon. So now you're just confused. Do you want him to play that way and make a mistake, or do you want him to, you know, make a generic sort of cricket mistake and just regularly nick one? You're in two minds, and he's constantly making you think, and he has you on your toes as an opposition team captain.
It's really interesting. You know, Brian Lara was obviously an attacking player who could block, but he was an attacking player, I think, at heart. And he always said the first 20 balls are the bowlers, right? So I'm going to face 20 balls, get out the other side of that, the rest is mine. Right, that was his theory. And not all attacking players have thought about it the way Lara has. But, you know, generally there is an element of getting yourself into your innings and doing everything else. Modern cricketers seem to come at this from a very different angle of how quickly can I move these slips away, you know, on a ground where the slips are the biggest problem. So if you're facing a spinner, it might be close in fielders, whatever your issue is. How quickly can I stop them bowling at the stumps if they're trying to get me bowled in LBW? To disrupt what they are doing. And, you know, I wrote about this, that there's a really angry cricket fan in Australia who was really upset when I was talking about how he was saying that Travis Head was lucky because India didn't have a first slip in Adelaide, right? And I was like, yes, but why didn't they have a first slip, right? Uh-huh. The reason they didn't have a first slip is because he kept smashing the ball through the offside and they were plugging holes. And so they eventually had to take their slip fielders away because otherwise he was going to score, you know, 70 runs off 30 balls, right? That's what the modern players do. We've seen Harry Brook do it, right? And KP and is probably one of the first guys to do this. It's slightly different to, I think, what Slater and Sehwag were doing. I think Slater and Sehwag were two people who just went, there are gaps, so I'm going to hit the ball in the air in these gaps and pick up a bunch of boundaries. And then eventually they'll plug those gaps and I'll score differently. But I think specifically with KP, he would flick the ball in the air on the leg side over and over again. Well, you're going to have to plug that from your third or fourth slip, right? Okay, so now you do that. Now he's going to try and get inside the line even further, maybe take it to square leg. You're going to have another field. And now suddenly KP's got two slips in and everyone else in world cricket's got three or four slips in. And that theory... And I'm just picking a bunch of random players. They're not just the pioneers of this, but they're very involved. Is how Head and Brook and Pant go about their cricket, right? Which is, we have weaknesses. We know we have weaknesses. So Travis Head's just like, if you just bowl just outside our stump, you know, on a good length over and over again, I would probably keeps edging the ball through to slips.
Yeah. Right?
So I'm just going to smash these balls through the offside until you need at least one person on the boundary, maybe two people on the boundary, and you need a ring of fielders. Oh, well, you don't have any slips anymore. Hmm. And then if you get too straight, I'll take you on the leg side as well. So that is modern batting. And it's very, again, to get back to the Gavaskar thing, it's very hard for the older guys to get their head around this.
True.
Because this is not how people used to go about attacking. Attacking was, if you look at Sobers would, again, get his eye in. Once he was in, then he'd be like, well, you can't get me out now, so I'm going to play all the shots that I have. And it doesn't matter where you put the fielders because I hit the ball so hard, you won't be able to stop it, and I can hit it in any direction I want to, right? That is very different to what we are seeing with these guys who are slightly more limited, but they are playing this style where they can score so quickly that you have to react to it. And so you have a look at some of the fields that Rishabh Pant is facing. Go back and look at Gilchrist's field. Well, you and I have talked about this before. One of the big things that Gilchrist did was he shook teams so much. Essentially, with Gilchrist, what you needed was four slips and a gully, or three slips and two gullies, right? But how can you do that when he's already hit a four to point? He's already pulled a four away. He's flicking the ball through mid-wicket as well. You run out of fielders for these guys. And you look at Rishabh Pant sometimes and you go, it's like there aren't enough fielders to cover the square for him.
Yeah, it's interesting how we're back to Sunil Gavaskar and how, you know, I feel like all the boomers, maybe I shouldn't be using that word because people use it as a derogatory term now, even though they are technically the baby boomers. But I feel like when they played their cricket, even the attacking shots were in unison with how cricket was meant to be played from a textbook lens, right? Whereas now cricket is 360 degrees and all these people that you've mentioned, Gilchrist, Pant, Brooke, Travis Head, their main aim is to make sure that the opposition team cannot follow their plans. They want to disrupt their plans, right? They want to just make them come up with a plan B or any sort of contingency plan and throw everything into a spanner. And that's maybe where people who would be in agreement with Sunil Gavaskar back in Australia, that's probably where they're coming from, because they think that is a stupid shot. But what Pant is trying to do is he's trying to manipulate the field according to himself, right? And maybe score some easy runs then.
We haven't done this piece yet, but I've got all the notes on it. I just haven't managed to put it together. But essentially, I remember this really clearly. When me and Rahul Dravid were talking for The Art of Batting.
Oh, there it is. Buy your copies.
Yeah. When we were talking for that, he brought up the reverse scoops of Joe Root and everything. And I sort of said casually, that's not the worst shot he played. The worst shot he's played of recent times is the one against India where he runs down the wicket and tries to slug one across the line and hits it straight up in the air. And Rahul's like, yes. And he said, but no one said that, right? Because that is, even if it's a bad shot, it's a bad normal cricket shot. You and I both know that the likelihood of him hit, he didn't need to hit that shot. He had India on the ropes a little bit at that stage. Yep. It's a low percentage shot and there's a fielder out for it, right? Whereas what me and Rahul Dravid are saying is if you're reverse scooping, right, chances are you are going to clear the ring more often than not. I know he hasn't every time, but you are more often than not. You're going to change the field, right? So it's a bad shot. Like we both agreed that it's a low percentage shot. We're not saying it's percentage shot, but it's a high percentage but it's a low percentage shot, but it has a high percentage chance of changing the field and changing the strategy.
Yes.
The shot that Joe Root played when he ran down the wicket and tried to slog the ball, and there's another one that Ben Duckett does in that series against India as well, those are terrible shots because there is no good outcome from those shots, right?
Yes.
And so that is a very hard thing, again, to explain to the generation from before, because coming down and using your feet is what they were taught to do, and turning around and reverse switch hitting was not. And I understand that because there wasn't a lot of innovation in batting from 1900 through to, 1985, 1990, when the reverse sweep becomes more popular, right? There isn't a lot of innovation in that period. Now there is, and there is, what we are finding out is there is more than one way to score runs in Test cricket and to disrupt teams. And that's why we are seeing this incredible style. And some of it is just because these guys are testing their limits in limited overs cricket, right?
That's true. It has a major impact. And then again, you know, these low percentage, high impact shots can have various consequences in or within a game. And I suppose, like, it's just the culture. cricketing culture or batting culture in the subcontinent that for the longest time has been that you need to put a price on your wicket, high elbow, this and that, which is Sunil Gavaskar's method as well. But Pant's method is different, right? So that's kind of where that dichotomy springs from, but at least they're best buds again. Anyway, we spoke about a bunch of records, how 252 runs were the highest run tally in test matches in England. No other wicketkeeper bat or only Andy Flower before had scored twin tons in a test match. And then, of course, no other Indian batter has scored twin hundreds versus England in a test match. But here's Varun's favorite stat that we cannot end this podcast without mentioning. Rishabh Pant has scored 8 test match hundreds. 6 of them have come in Senna conditions. 4 of them have come in England. And that is that number, 4 test match hundreds, is the joint highest for all wicketkeeper batters in England in test history. How bizarre is it that he is on par with Alex Stewart and Matt Prior?
Yeah, and ahead of Les Ames. It's remarkable because it's not as if they haven't had 4 guys who were really good in that job, right? Yeah. Like, if this was Australia and you're like, well, up until Gilchrist and Haddon, they didn't have anyone, you'd be like, fair enough. But England were the first country to pick, I don't know if you know this, but England were basically the first country to decide to pick wicketkeepers who could bat rather than keepers who could keep. So there's a guy called Jim Parks who plays in the 60s. England have been trying this for a very long time. And you know, Alan Knott, again, even though Alan Knott was a great wicketkeeper, he was a very good batter. They've had, if you look at Parks, Stewart, Ames, Prior, am I missing one? Knott.
Are you?
Right? Yeah. Did I say Knott twice?
I think you might have said Knott twice.
Yeah. Bairstow, sorry, is the other one I was
Stewart.
Thinking of.
There's Stewart as well.
Yeah. So they've had like 5 guys who could have done this before.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a remarkable thing. Also, in an era of which there are a lot of, you know, India is searching for players who are good outside of Asia, right? Because they can find players who can play good in Asia. You know, it's always been their biggest problem, right? You know, we look at some of the old great players of India and a lot of their numbers are just completely stacked up at home or against Pakistan. And they don't stack up away. You know, we just did a podcast where we talked about Vijay Mandrekar, who's a really good player, Vijay Mandrekar. But the reason he doesn't average over 40 is because he makes all of his runs when he's playing at home and he makes none of them when he leaves Asia. That's an easy thing to find. To find a player like Rishabh Pant is exceptional, right? Because that's a whole different ball game that you're talking about here now. And that's the sort of players that India and Pakistan and Sri Lanka and, you know, Nepal and, you know, Bangladesh and Oman have to find, right?
Yeah.
We know they can find the good players at home, but it's finding the players who can do it away. And then he isn't just good away from home, he's great away from home.
That's the thing, right? It's absolutely ludicrous that he has the joint most hundreds for any wicketkeeper bat in England. And overall as well, like if he's averaging 44.44 with the bat after 44 test matches, I think that is insane. Which kind of brings me to the last talking point before we wrap this up, right? So you and I, when we did the quick picks for best wicketkeeper batters in history, Pant did make the list, right? Saad and I at Pro Sports were thinking of doing a 5-people draft for all-time test team. And I was talking to him and I was like, you know what? Pant probably makes it. Because we're both very clear that he's India's best. We take him ahead of Farooq Engineer and MS Dhoni. Do you think he could end his career as amongst the top 5 wicketkeepers of all time?
Wow. So there was a very angry comment on the video or the article where someone going, wicketkeeping wasn't mentioned once here. And it hasn't been mentioned here.
Yes, and he's pretty damn good wicketkeeper as well, right?
Is he? In the history of the game, Rishabh Pant? We just watched the whole innings where he kept getting... Serviceable is not very good. Those are very big differences.
Okay, I think he's been a very good keeper post-injury, which is surprising because he had a life-threatening injury. And he had one drop catch in this game. But he is not in this team just because he can bat. He can keep. You can't say he's like a really dodgy wicketkeeper. I think it's pretty good.
I don't think before 1985 he would get picked as a wicketkeeper in any cricket side in the world.
Okay.
So if you're talking historic, I think you have to factor that in, don't you? If you look at that first test, now let me just have a look at
false shot percentages or keeping keeping.
No,
fumbles.
No, you're talking about keeping, aren't we?
Yeah.
So if you look at that first test, let's see if I can bring it up. Sorry. So in here we go. So India, he keeps in the first innings and there's 8 byes. He keeps in the second innings and there's 12 byes. Now the second innings, I would say there's a bit of weird bounce at times and whatever.
Yes.
But he wasn't gloving the ball well. That's 20 byes over 2 innings.
And some balls did die down on him, I do agree. But yeah, I'm not saying he's the best wicketkeeper or best glovesman we have had. Yeah.
No, but my point is then that's when it becomes more confusing. Because the person making the comment, even though it had nothing to do with the article, their general point is correct, right?
Yes.
Their general point is that I was comparing him to the other great batting wicketkeepers of all time, right?
True.
Because that is the level he's on. I don't think his wicketkeeping is as good as Andy Flowers or Adam Gilchrist's wicketkeeping.
True.
Right? And he certainly his wicketkeeping isn't as good as MS Dhoni or Farooq Engineer, right? Like, I think that's just very, very obvious as well. So then it becomes a thing of how you rank these things, right?
True. So what are you valuing?
Yeah, so did Les Ames and Alan Knott come back to the top? Because we know they were specialist wicketkeepers who could both really bat, right? Where do you put Bob Taylor or Prasanna Jayawardena, right? Or Jack Russell. You know, some of the greatest wicketkeepers we've ever seen. But there's a bunch of Australian, Bert Oldfield and these sorts of guys as well, who were just absolute geniuses with the gloves, but couldn't bat at all. So that's where it gets tricky. If you're just talking about a combination of wicketkeeping and batting, and you're saying, well, for his era, he's not terrible, which is, I think, what you were saying.
Yeah.
If you say for his era, he's not terrible and he's about normal, I think he's back in the top, you know, the discussion for the top five of all times. But if you are really factoring in 50% batting and 50% wicketkeeping, he's so far off Alan Knott or Bob Taylor or Prasanna Jayawardena that it's not funny, right? Like he's a different species to those guys. He's so messy behind the stumps, right? At times where, and I know Dhoni was messy as well. Like they're different kinds of wicketkeepers, but you compare that to some of the old great wicketkeepers. Like if you want to have a look at some of the highlights of Jack Russell, which are on YouTube, it's just like, okay, now I understand the difference between modern wicketkeeping and old wicketkeeping, right? And it's also, it's worth noting that bowlers are faster now and spinners are faster.
Yeah.
Right? And there are more slower balls. So I think wicketkeeping should be a little bit more sloppy than it ever has been before. But yeah, that really depends on how you frame that conversation. I think if you are looking at the greatest wicketkeeping batters of all time, I think it's Gilchrist, Flower, Les Ames, and Punt would be in the top four there. I don't think he's ahead of any of those guys at the moment, but he has the ability to maybe go ahead of all of them. But if you're factoring in wicketkeeping, it just gets weird, dude. I probably won't. I don't think I'd ever be able to write that book because I don't think there's enough written on these guys. I don't think there's enough information or video out there to have a look at them. But there's no doubt that wicketkeeping was a specialist skill. And now we've turned it into modern wicketkeepers are more like fifth or sixth bowlers, right?
Yeah.
Like, so if you compare the best bowler in your team to the fifth or sixth best bowler in your team, there's an obvious drop off. That's what has happened with wicketkeeping.
Yeah, well, it is fascinating. You guys let us know in the comment section below as well whether you think he can make it to the best or top five wicketkeepers of all time by the time he retires. And some of you will YouTube Jack Russell videos and only end up with dog videos. I'm enjoying that joke a bit. Yeah.
There is some really good clips of Alan Knott online as well. And also, if you want to see what wicketkeeping was like, just the generation, you know, your uncle or auntie's generation, Darren Berry is another one to look up. There are some... The artistry of some of the wicketkeepers before compared to the sort of bumbling athleticism that we see now is so shocking to me how much it's changed.
Yeah. But either way, whatever your opinions are on Pant, leave them in the comment section below. And he does make India's best ever test team for me, like all-time Indian test team. I'd have Pant. Anyway, that wraps up this episode.
You can't go yet.
Okay.
What about if you're completely accounting for wicketkeeping?
Ooh. Maybe you'd have to bring in what's our guy's name who fought with Boria? I've completely blanked out on his name.
Ridhiman Saha.
Ridhiman Saha. Maybe he comes into the conversation then.
Well, no, but my point is, if you bring in wicketkeeping, I wonder if MS Dhoni comes back into that conversation, even though he wasn't the same level of batter. But MS Dhoni wasn't particularly good at diving, which is a very big skill to have in a test team when you want to be able to cover more ground with your slip. So it's fascinating. And there is no right.
If it's a ranked earner, then Dhoni's keeping for me for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, it's an interesting conversation to have. But anyway, that kind of is the end of this podcast. So like, share, and subscribe if you enjoyed this content. And don't forget to go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That could prove to be a one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. Leave all of your thoughts about Rishabh Pant in the comment section below, and we'll see you soon enough on another one of our shows. That's all for now. Have a good one, and goodbye.
thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.